Peter DiMario, you deserve some kind of a special award for the title of your book. I think it's the best title I've heard in a long time. It's called, listeners, Jiggle. And what a great title it is for a book about jellies.
Well, thank you for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I
Now,
had to make sure that it was lighthearted and fun.
you make sure what?
We wanted to make sure that the title was lighthearted and fun, just like the rest
Oh,
of it.
right. Well, of course, a long time ago, or some time ago, we interviewed, what was his name? Sam Bompas and Harry Parr.
Yeah, I love those guys.
Yeah. And
They
we've
do
actually
incredible work.
seen there was.
They do incredible work.
Oh yeah, well, one of them is an architect, so that was sort of a natural, falling into architectural reconstructions and so forth. But their approach is so experimental. And that's kind of not what your book's about, right?
Yeah, my book is a little bit more straightforward, a little bit more for the home cooks. Some of the recipes get a little more adventurous, but I tried to keep it current and flavor combinations that people kind of know and love now. So we tried to keep it very accessible.
Well, I think that that the other guys have gotten into. I mean, I really expected their work because I saw it in real life. They did a reception for the World's Best Restaurants in London one year, and I expected it to be more sensational than it turned out to be in real life. But and I expected it to be something that would linger in the public eye. And it actually just sort of abruptly disappeared. But they ran into some trouble because I think I'm not sure I have the story correct, but I believe they wanted one of their creations to actually explode on site, and nobody was real happy about that.
Don't know about that one, but I know they do some really adventurous stuff. They've done some large-scale gelatin installations and glow-in-the-dark things, and they're always creating something really magical.
But they're still going, are they? Because I haven't heard anything from them in a while.
I believe so.
Good. That's good. But, of course, I thought immediately of that, what's the painting at auction that went for, I don't know how many millions, and it was remotely destroyed. Would you know what I'm talking
Oh,
about?
yes. Was it a Bansky?
Yes, it was a
I think it was a
Banksy.
Bansky piece that shredded as soon as the person paid for
It started to shred. I loved it.
it.
So anyhow, enough of that. That goes back to my original background in art history, which is not what we're talking about. We're talking about the culinary arts. You're very straightforward, I think. Some of the images are just really beautiful with the light shining through. You got caught up in the in the well. Tell our listeners what your first full-time gig was, is, whatever.
Well, so I'm not a chef. My full-time job is I'm a producer. I work with a production company. We focus on non-scripted work around the arts. So I do documentaries about the arts for networks like PBS and All Arts. We do a lot of work with arts organizations as well. I'm very much into theater and theatrics, and that's kind of what led me into this. To give you a little backstory on how this all happened, during the pandemic, while everybody was making banana bread and sourdough bread, started to play with gelatin just out of something to do. I was really interested in suspending things in it and using edible glitters and how I could make it look beautiful. And that just kind of took up a chunk of my time, and I started to get more and more interested in it. And then once the world started to reopen, when people were having dinner parties, that would be what I brought. That would be my contribution to the dinner party. And people got really excited about it. It was just fun nostalgia moment of unmolding a gelatin at a dinner party and having this like sparkly creation on the center of the table. And that's really how I got started with gelatin. And then my friend Judy Choate, who I believe you guys know as well, I think she was on your show a while back. She approached me, she's a friend of mine, and she said, "Look, I really believe that gelatin is going to have a comeback. I think people are ready for it. I think it's the time. What do you think about putting some recipes together and seeing if we can get a book deal?" And that's how that happened.
How does you know what I'm thinking?
What are you saying?
I'm having a Parkinson moment. But seriously, what is gelatin? What is Jell-O? I mean, I can remember when my mother used to make it in great big bowls, and if she was really in a good mood, she would make trifle, which of course incorporated a good dose of Jell-O as well. But what is Jell-O?
Yeah, well, gelatin is it's made from animal. It's made from bone, the traditional gelatin. There's also lots of varieties of it now. So even within this cookbook, we use the standard powdered gelatin that you see in every store, the Knox gelatin. We also use gelatin sheets, which gives you a bit of a clearer gelatin. I like to use that, especially some of the recipes. I do some clear layers with gold leaf suspended in it. And the gelatin sheets work really well for that because it makes that layer crystal clear. And there's also agar agar, which is a gelatin made from seaweed. So it's vegan friendly. So I do some of the recipes that are vegetable forward in the book too that use this vegan gelatin as well. So it is not the gelatin of old, the Jell-O prepackaged synthetic colors. I don't use any of that in the book. Everything is using non-flavored gelatin and then making our own flavors with different ingredients.
Yeah, but I remember when our son Adam was very young. I guess he was like a toddler. He would get ear infections, and every time he got something, they put him on liquid Jell-O. I mean, just like the packaged stuff, and he would break out with pimples.
Oh no. Well, again, that was the whole point of this too, is this book was really to kind of break that history with gelatin, because for the longest time, too, people associated it with hospitals and being sick and this brightly colored synthetic food, that I was like, you know what, I think I could do this, and I could do this better, and I could make better flavors and more sophisticated flavors and more sophisticated styles of using it. And that was kind of what the jump-off point for creating the book.
Yeah, well, I remember my mother constructing her Jell-O salads. Her favorite was some kind of a canned cherry thing that she floated in there. And it was technically difficult to get everything floating on the same level on this Jell-O.
I read all of the old 70s cookbooks, and some of those recipes were wild. They were wild. I mean, people were eating tuna fish and cottage cheese in lime Jell-O, and I don't know what these people were thinking. this cookbook is definitely not that.
Yeah, well, of course, Peter Haig has tales of when he first came to the U.S., he was working for Alcoa, and one of the VIPs invited him to a lunch, I think it was, at their home. And he was totally taken aback when he was served a Jell-O salad. He had no idea what to do with it.
I don't even know why they started calling it salad, because it is far from a salad.
Yeah, well, my Aunt Maxine, I remember She always, I mean, she we would not have a family dinner without her serving up a Jell-O salad, and then she started complaining that nobody was eating the Jell-O salad because she had to keep taking it back to the
Yeah, went back to
Now, I have a
the
question for you. What did she put in her Jell-O salad? Do you remember?
I don't remember.
But apparently nobody
But I
ate it, so
mean,
it wasn't
I,
anything that
nothing
great.
would surprise me. I mean, because in like in that era, they put everything in it.
I know. It's so bizarre. So, again, the idea for this book was to kind of, I read through all those recipes, and sometimes I would take aspects of some of the ones, because they weren't all terrible. There were some fruity, fun ones, and I would take some aspects from them and then modernize it with new ingredients and, again, adding layers using edible glitter and suspending edible glitter in the gelatin or using gold leaf to make it sparkle more. So I've kind of tried to revamp some of those old recipes, and then of course some of the recipes are just completely original out of my brain.
But you know what?
you took everyday objects, if you like Bloody Mary mix, and you transformed it into
Correct.
something that into something that people would really fight over if they knew what was in it.
Correct. So yeah, so for the Bloody Mary one, I wanted to come up with a fun way to serve Bloody Marys, and everybody loves gelatin shots. They're such a big thing. They're even at all the bars now. So I wanted to try to do a brunch version of that. So what I did was I created my own Bloody Mary recipe that has gelatin in it, and I put one shrimp in it so that you could scoop the whole shot out and eat it with the shrimp. So it's kind of built into one bite.
Right. You're in a playful mood with that one.
Yeah, a lot of them are playful. I mean, gelatin is
Yeah.
fun. It's playful. It's shimmery. It's wiggly. I mean, it gets people in a good mood.
Well, I had this go-to first course for years, which was avocado, and that I'm going to give away the point of this.
Sounds
Chilled
great.
consommé madeleine and the caviar.
Oh, yum.
And but I didn't want to go to all the trouble of making the consommé madeleine. So I found, I think it was Campbell's. Somebody makes it. But then all of a sudden it disappeared. Nobody was buying it anymore.
And guess who got the job of finding this
Was that on you,
in the
Peter?
store? My God!
Well, I do have a recipe in here for something very similar, and it's not too difficult. So, if you want to take another stab at it.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at the recipe here, right here, and what's essentially the difference between Jell-O and aspic?
Well, Jell-O is a brand. So
Yeah, it
Jell-O, anytime
became
you
a
see
generic term though for jelly in this
for Jell-O,
country.
right. Right. And
Not
aspic
in
is just
England.
not the England didn't have Jell-O.
I mean, Jell-O was specifically American, as far as I can tell.
I believe so. So yeah, to answer your question, an aspic is basically just a gelled tomato-based item. So it has gelatin in it.
Go ahead, don't fade.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I loved your thing about the vegetarian. We had this sweet young thing when I worked at Pittsburgh Magazine. We had this sweet young thing who prided herself on being a vegetarian, and she would consume huge quantities of Jell-O. And our really mean editor-in-chief, after watching this for a while, explained to her what was in it. And she
Yeah,
was
because
really
you
traumatized.
Oh, the poor thing. And I'm sure that was before. I mean, I don't know the history of agar agar and how long ago this came about, but now there is an option for vegans to have gelatin and make gummies with it and all sorts of things. It is a little bit different. It's a little different to work with. I had multiple attempts at things when I first started using it. I was definitely using too much at first, and I definitely made a few hockey puck consistency gelatins in the beginning that you could barely bite through. So it did take a lot of testing and trial and error. And with gelatin, for me anyway, in my testing, it always went one way or the other in the beginning. Either I went to unmold something and it didn't set right, or one of the layers didn't set right, and it just turned into a puddle on the table. Or I used too much of something and then it was like chewing through leather. So there is a bit of a science to it.
Yeah, well, you've really explained that in this book, the science behind all of this, and you give some really clear, straightforward directions on what not to do, as well as what to do, which
Yeah, well, I
I
definitely learned.
and you also are very concerned with how the product is unmolded, which is that's a relief because. There's nothing more discouraging than to go through all this trouble and then have the thing tear apart when you're trying to get it out of the mold.
I was at a when I first started doing this, one of my first recipes, I was working on one of the deconstructed pina colada ones. And I went to a friend's house for dinner, and everybody was sitting around waiting for dessert. And I took the mold out of the fridge, and I did the warm water, and I soaked it. I flipped it out. I went to unmold it, and for some reason, the cherry layer that I had in the center at the time just didn't set properly. So the whole thing just fell off the dish onto the table. I mean, it tasted great. We kind of just scooped it up and put it into bowls, but it was super embarrassing.
Sort of like my pavlova. I mean, pavlova. I went, the recipe I used in Australia was from an Australian, and it worked fine in Australia, but it's so temperature and humidity sensitive that I never sort of got it right pavlova in the States. And I had one luncheon guest where I served my prize.
Pavlova.
Prize thing, and the guest said it was the first dessert she ever had to eat with the knife and the steak for knife a steak knife and a fork.
That's funny. Now, my pavlova, the last time I tried to make it was the opposite. It came out and it was so sticky still, and it never kind of got that nice crisp outer shell. Pavlova's
Yeah,
tricky.
it's got to be just right temperature wise. I mean. Even our Australian friend visiting us, and with the humidity and so forth, she had a fiddle with the oven door constantly to get the right control of the humidity.
Now, Peter, you must understand, you're talking to the person who can't make Yorkshire pudding. I mean,
He doesn't know.
how can you not make Yorkshire pudding?
Well, he what Peter DiMario doesn't know is that you're actually from Yorkshire, so I have to learn how to make Yorkshire pudding.
I mean,
And it never was right.
he
It
was
never was right.
Is it hard to make? I can't say that I've ever made it.
She was a
Well,
disgrace, Peter.
it's a lot of fiddling around. So, what, like, if you were to be asked about bragging rights, what really personal recipe did you hit on that you would like to showcase from this book?
I think. I kind of base my recipes on, I'll call them audience reactions. Basically, my friends and family that I've made them for over the past couple of years, and what kind of got the biggest reactions. People do love the chocolate forward ones. There's a great one that's kind of a chocolate orange. It's almost like a panna cotta but it comes out richer than a panna cotta. People love that one. The boozy ones are always a hit. The
I'm just looking here. I mean, do you get the same sensation of, like, if you have a watermelon margarita bite? I mean, it's not the same experience as actually drinking a margarita.
No, it's not, but there's tequila in it, so the effects are the same if you have enough of it. that one in particular, I just made it for a family party this summer. I did a bunch of them. And that one comes out really nice. It's a little bit softer because you serve it in, you can do cubes or you can serve it in little individual cups. But it's really just a bright watermelon flavor. You get a little hint of that lime and then a little hint of the tequila. And I use black sea salt, just a little sprinkling on top that kind of looks like watermelon seeds, but it also gives you that salty sweet flavor that people love.
Oh, great.
So that one is always a hit.
Yeah, I like your goats and beets bites.
Yeah, that's the one that when I mentioned earlier, some of my fails with that agar-agar. The first time I made them, I mean, I could barely bite through it. I was like, okay, I gotta rework this one. The flavor was spot on. It was just too much gelatin. But now they're a nice, perfect little appetizer bite.
So now that I'm just looking here at your fantasy bombs. Talk about English. Yeah, one of my nieces produced a fantasy pie, and our son, the American cousin, had never had a fantasy and didn't realize that it was not some masterful creation.
It's so common in England. One of my favorites.
Yeah.
One of my favorite flavor combinations, banana, caramel, chocolate. I mean,
oh, you can't miss on that, can you? It's really great.
No. In any configuration. Now, the way I do it in these domes. So I do the banana part in the dome, and then I scoop out some in the middle. You fill it with dulce de leche, and then you cover the bottom with hard shell chocolate so you can pop it out. And it's not too complicated. It looks harder than it is. What I try to do with a lot of the recipes, too, if I have one of the layers, if it's a multiple-layer one, if one of the layers is a little more complicated, I try to make the other layers a little more simple so that people aren't getting overwhelmed with these three layers because these all take time. They have to set, and then you do the next layer. And
yeah, I was going to ask you, like, your polka dot peaches and cream. I mean, how long did it take you to get that one right?
That one took a little while.
I would say.
But now that I figured out the hard part, the hardest part was figuring out how to get those polka dots. And
yeah, I mean,
chilling the mold, and then you treat it almost like cookies. So you set a thin layer of gelatin and use a cookie cutter to cut out the shapes. And then once the mold is cold, they'll stick to the edges, and then you could fill it. So the cutout shapes stick to the edge of the mold, and it works. I've done it multiple times, and it works, and it looks very cool. People are always impressed by that one because, you know, it's not obvious right away how you made it happen.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, the one I can't get my head around at all is this thing with the asparagus sticking out. I keep trying to envision being served that. I would not be happy.
Well, it's delicious. It's basically just blanched asparagus with a asparagus puree that's gelled at the bottom of it with lemon and asparagus. So it has lots of flavors, and it's just a fun way to serve asparagus kind of outside of the box.
How do you eat it?
You slice down. So you would just slice down between the asparagus and take a piece of it so that half of the asparagus is kind of coated with that asparagus. It's basically like an asparagus soup that's gelled at the bottom.
Well, so you mastered this.
I'm going to be honest. The savory ones were the most challenging for me. Savory gelatin was not something I grew up eating or was very familiar with. So I tried to make sure that all the flavors that I used were interesting and accessible and not too far out there.
Uh-huh. Right. Now that you've mastered this, have you stopped experimenting with it? Are you looking for even more opportunity in the category?
When I finished experimenting with all of these recipes, I had to take a break. I was so I was tired of looking at gelatin. My poor husband was like, please, no more gelatin. Can we take a break? So I took a couple months off. And my husband is not a very adventurous eater, so he was very much done with me. But since then, you know, I find myself, like, liking the challenge now. If we're, like, going somewhere, I'm like, oh, what do we have around the house? Let me see if I can come up with something. I think because I'm so versed in how to use the gelatin now, and that's what I want people to get from the book, too, is that once you read this book and you play with some of the recipes, the options are endless. So you can look at flavor combinations that you like or take a layer from one thing and a layer from another recipe. And, you know, once you kind of have an idea of the measurements, you can play and create your own. And I feel like that's when I have the most fun now. If I'm like, oh, we're going to this party, and I know that the host likes this flavor and this flavor, so maybe I'll try to come up with something specifically for them.
Yeah. You know, like the blackberries, chestnuts, and cream, oh my.
Yeah. That was another one that was kind of a wintry fall flavor.
Yeah. Well, you had fun with the, I mean, your writing side really came out with the titles of your dishes and recipes. Like, I'm looking at Honeydew Raz, R-A-Z. But Lemony Blueberry Layers is beautiful.
Yeah, really, that's another pretty. very delicious summery little treat. And I have to say, I did a lot of the writing, my co-author, like I said, she was on your show prior, Judy Choate.
Yeah.
We worked together on this. So I would come up with the recipes, and then she would help me format them into the correct format for a cookbook, because she has written many, many cookbooks.
Yeah, what's she working on now?
I believe she's working on, another personal cookbook that's kind of her own greatest hit, almost. Because I don't know how many cookbooks she's up to now. I know it's over 90 cookbooks that she's written.
It's a lot.
Yeah, she's amazing. She's such a wonderful person. I'm so thankful to have her as a friend and co-author now.
I did one cookbook, a chef's cookbook, and it was so draining. I never wanted to get anywhere near making another cookbook.
I know. People have asked me, are you going to do another one? Do you think you want to do more? And I said, I don't know. I think I need more time. Because right now, I'm like, no way. It is way more than I ever anticipated.
Yeah, I don't know. So people who do these, we've interviewed that couple that does the, the Instapot stuff, you know. And they have, like, 12 Instapots going, daily. I mean, it's just like, it sounds to me like some extreme, is there such a thing as culinary sadism? Masochism, I guess it would be, culinary masochism.
That would be it. Yeah, and think about gelatin, too. I mean, everything takes so long, and if it doesn't work, then you start from the beginning, and, you know, when you're experimenting, you spend hours kind of waiting for things to set and trying it out, and then you taste it, and you're like, oh, you know what, it needs more of this, it needs less of this, and then you got to start from the beginning again. And I didn't really think that through when we started talking about this cookbook and how much time and work that was going to be. And I, like I said, this isn't my full-time job, too, so I would be up late at night, kind of away to have an alarm set, that layer is going to be done, I just need to do that one more layer, and then it could sit overnight.
Well, anyhow, once again, we're going to be saying goodbye to Peter DiMario, but we really enjoyed talking to you about your cookbook, Jiggle, which has to be some kind of a Hall of Fame title for a cookbook.
Well, thank you both so much. It was great to speak with you. Thank you for your enthusiasm around the book. I'm glad you guys are
enjoying it. We have all. So, if you do ever write another cookbook, keep us in mind.
I certainly will, although I don't know if that's going to happen, but I will.
Yeah, I understand. Believe me, you're talking to somebody who understands entirely. I mean, I used to wake up in the middle of the night realizing that this chef called for, like, three, some kind of little bird, and then, 7 ounces of bird liver, and I'm there's no way I'd work. And it took over my life, absolutely my life.
It does. It's still like racked my brain, and they're still like, oh my gosh, did I get this all right? Is this okay? Are people going to like this? I mean, it's a very vulnerable experience.
It is. And some people thrive on it, and some people like us are not necessarily that enthusiastic.
Yes.
Oh, then you did swell. You did swell, Peter DiMario. And if you do get around to anything, let us know.
I certainly will.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.